Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at your summertime reading. I have a good book for you to add to your list. And it's written by our guest, Lori King. Lori R. King on the phone with us. She's the author of 13 Mary Russell Mysteries, 5 contemporary novels featuring Kate Martinelli, and many acclaimed standalone novels, including her latest, Lockdown, a novel of suspense. And believe me, it's a page-turner. You may like novels that are contemporary, or maybe you prefer historical settings. Maybe you're a fan of Lori's work. If so, what's your favorite character? Love to hear from you, and I hope you'll give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Lori King, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
Well, I tell you what, I'm pretty good today, but you caused me to lose a lot of sleep one night because I was trying to get to the end to find out who the shooter was. Oh, my goodness me. What a page-turner. Man, it's how did this, I think this, the backstory on this novel, and maybe first talk about the novel, sort of describe it, and then we can talk about the backstory of it.
It's a contemporary thriller. And, you know, the thing that started it out was I had written a series of, not a series, but a number of short stories over the years. And in the back of my head, I knew they were all connected. Nobody else knew they were connected. Certainly my editor didn't know they were connected, but I knew that they had something to do with each other. And one of the things that I love about a standalone is that it enables you to play with new characters. With a series, obviously, it's like going back to a family reunion. You meet the same people. It's great to see them. Occasionally there's new faces. You meet them. And then you go on. But with a standalone novel, like with short stories, it's a whole new world. And so what I have done in this book is make use of some of those short stories as the, as you say, backstory for some of the characters. So that there's 4 of the characters, their stories are based on some short stories that I wrote over a period of roughly 20 years.
It was really cool. I'm glad you put that at the end of the book, the explanation. I sat there and thought, oh, okay, and the sort of things started locking together in my mind, and I thought, that was really, really cool.
Thank you.
Ah, man. So talk a little about what the novel is about.
Well, this is not an easy novel to talk about.
I know it is. That's why I was asking you. I didn't want to start trying to explain it myself.
Oh, make me do the work. That's right. You know, a book like this, it starts out by saying in the first section, which is the pre-dawn section, because it all takes place in the course of a day. And it starts out by letting the reader know that a gun comes to school. And so it's hard to say that this is not about a school shooting, because that obviously is part of the story. But what interested me in the writing of the book and the reason that I wrote it is the sense of community. I mean, when you see a school shooting on the news, you see all these individuals and you see a community that comes together, but you don't know how they came together on the day. All you see is afterwards. And what interested me is, if you have a school community, how does something like that come about? And how does the school react? There's one brief image in the book where a nurse is talking about how inoculations work and how you summon antibodies to fight off an infection. And that image fascinated me, the idea that a school is an organism. And that's what the book is.
And it's an interesting community of people.
One of the things I love about this area, it's based on an area in Central California where I lived for a number of years. And one of the things that I adored and that fascinated me was the mix of people you get. Because it being an agricultural community, you got farm workers. It being an area that's not a very far drive from Silicon Valley, you got commuters from the high-end tech firms. So you had this incredible breadth of people who would send their kids to school. And the community that comes out of that, I found fascinating.
Yeah, I certainly did too. It was really fun to read. As I was reading, I was thinking, how in the heck is she keeping all these threads together as she writes this book?
Well, it's all about weaving, isn't it?
Oh my goodness me! So you start sort of in the present, and then you go back in time to describe the main characters and where they're coming from, with lots of kind of cool little surprises along the way. I don't know which character you found most interesting.
Oh, I loved any number of them. Some of them came fairly late in the process, and others came fairly early. But it was interesting how once they stepped in, their voices became distinct. One of the things that I always have problems with in books that are of the thriller variety, that is, they're short sections and sometimes a lot of people in them, is that you fight to keep track of all the individuals.
Yes.
And I think that what I did with the book is sort of embrace that. You have the characters, if at first you try and keep them all straight, you won't.
Yeah.
Because you're not supposed to. These are small characters in a larger picture. They're like it's like trying to focus on the dots of paint that make a landscape. You have to step back and allow the process to go forward. And that's how I ended up writing the book, is all these voices. the voices in my head, Larry, told me to do this. the way that the chorus of voices comes about, you have individuals, some of whom have a very strong presence in the story, such as Gordon, others of whom are very small, such as Mina. But the voices come together in ways that interested me as the story grew and on the page and in my mind.
I have Linda, the principal. I was interested in her. I have some principal friends, different principals of different schools, and as you described her, a lot of my own friends who are in that field kind of go through some of the same angst that Linda McDonald did.
Yes, I've been really interested because it's been a number of years since my kids have been at middle school, as you can imagine, because I'm now 65 and my kids are getting on towards their own middle years. But what interested me with this was I've had several middle school teachers say to me that they could identify individual students that they knew in those characters. You know, there's Chaco, the guy who looks really tough, but he's taken care of his own younger sibling and helping his mom. There's Mina, who looks like a punk and, is interested in books. and I think the teachers, too, that as you get a sense of the background. I mean, middle school is a fascinating place, isn't it? You've got kids who are children. You've got kids who are adults. And that mix of hormones and passions and doubts and fears that all come together in a middle school, make the people who voluntarily work at a place like that some of the most fascinating people I know.
I would agree. I've served as president of a school board of a school that is K through 8. So I recognized some of those same students and some of the same teachers, well, at least characteristics of them in this book. Well, here's just a little aside. Christina and Deb on Facebook both have written in, and they're big fans of your Mary Russell series, and they wonder when the next one's coming out.
A year from now.
Ah.
You are interrupting my morning's work, Larry.
Well, I'll let you ponder on that for a minute, Lori King, New York Times bestselling author of those Mary Russell series, five contemporary novels featuring Kate Martinelli and the most and many acclaimed standalone novels. Her latest is Lockdown, a novel of suspense. Join in with your own questions. Comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. The novel we are talking about is titled Lockdown, a novel of suspense, and the author, Lori R. King, a New York Times bestselling author, and you know, many of the 13 Mary Russell mysteries, very popular, five contemporary novels featuring Kate Martinelli. And this standalone novel is Lockdown, a novel of suspense. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you, and lots of folks online, so let's take a call. Alice in Sun River, Oregon. Hi, thank you for calling.
I wanted to ask Lori, given the number of characters in Lockdown, and most of them are just incredibly intriguing, will she be going on sometime in the future and writing more books that have these characters in them, one or more of them?
Yeah, that's always a problem when you fall in love with characters, isn't it? That you get to the end of what you think of as a standalone. And I speak from experience because I did this with a book called Touchstone. You get to the end and you think, oh, well, that's a nice standalone, and I don't have to go back to that world. And then they start nagging at you, and you think, but what happened after that? And so you get to the end of this book, and without giving away any details about who is still standing when the dust settles, there is a situation that arises at the very end of the book that makes you think that the story has a door that's opening at the far end of it.
That's what I thought.
And looking at it, I think, yeah, that would be really interesting to, you know, to do something with those characters. But Alice kindly enough did not give a spoiler there, so I shall follow her lead and not give your readers any spoilers.
Alice, thanks a lot. And just to go along with that, you actually have a couple of characters from your Kate Martinelli series that pop up in Lockdown.
I know. Kate is on the phone in Lockdown.
Yeah.
But Brother Erasmus, who came in the second of the Martinellis to play the fool, he definitely has a role in this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Alice, thank you again. Michael in Green Bay, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Michael.
Hi, everyone. I don't read a lot, but really the only book or series that I was really engrossed with was the Left Behind Christian fiction series, and don't know if that was considered a suspense novel, but to me I was in suspense from the very beginning to the end of this masterfully written series, and I just became how it was written, I became part of the family and the characters in that book, and it just brought me in and held me and made me think that all these people became my family, and that's just what I want to say, and I don't know who else is so familiar with my feelings on that, but I can take my call up the air and listen to your response.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, that's the sign of a well-written book, isn't it, that it sticks with you. Even, you know, long afterwards, you pop up. And, of course, that's one of the joys of a series, is that you have a continuing visitation among the people. But even a standalone like this, I often find that sometimes the smaller characters are the ones that stay in the mind most clearly.
Yeah, I would agree. Margaret in Stoughton, it's your turn. Hi, Margaret. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to first say that, Larry, I love your show. I love the variety of people you have on and the different topics.
Thank you.
But I love Lori King. Since that first Kate Martinelli book, I have been hooked on your characters.
So thank you very much.
I was glad to see that you brought her up in this latest book, and I was wondering, were you going to write another Kate Martinelli novel? Because you haven't written one of her since in a long, long time. Although I do like the Sherlock Holmes book, Mary Russell Sherlock Holmes, too.
Yeah.
And your standalone ones were good.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of problem when you have a number of different series that are going on, isn't it, that... Okay, I have the Martinellis, I have the Russells. I also have the Stuyvesant and Gray that I'd like to return to. Oh, and I'd really like to write a revisitation of the San Juan books, because there's Folly and Keeping Watch, and I need to finish up that series.
No. Yeah.
You know, if I could only write 5 books a year, we'd all be really happy.
Why can't you?
Because I'm talking on the radio, you guys.
Oh, boy. Margaret.
Well, keep writing.
All right. Thanks, Margaret. Thanks for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Questions about this book or comments about Lori's other books and series, I'd love to hear from you. 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Certainly love to hear from you. A lot of the narrative in lockdown is focused, you know, you're talking about middle school age kids. And I thought you did a good job of finding the voice, that voice, but how did you do that?
Well, it's interesting because the voices of the kids are not exactly what you would think of. If you walk down the hall of a middle school, that isn't exactly what you would hear. But what I wanted to do with those kids was to show them, not as adults see them, as, you know, frantic and fragile and concerned with surface problems and fixated on popularity and that sort of thing. But I wanted to show them from their own points of view. That is, we're the adults in this mix.
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling that if you really went into a group of eighth graders, especially heads, you would find that their disdain for adults who just don't get it makes them very certain that they are the grown-ups. And I wanted to do that. So I thought about having the voices of the kids overly concerned with, you know, name brands and the kinds of social media sites that are popular now and the fixation on popularity and all the rest of it. But it seemed to me that by focusing on the more eternal and more mature impressions of their inner lives, that it would strike, it would not only make it more accessible to most adult readers, but it would also make it a truer voice. I mean, there's always a problem when you're writing accurate contemporary stuff, because in 5 years it's so out of date.
Yeah.
And that's always a concern for someone like me who writes something that, knowing that the paperback won't come out for a year, that people won't find this for 5 years, that, you know, in 10 years people will pick it up and read it. And you don't want everything to be based on, you know, it's the sort of MySpace problem of, oh, yeah, there was a thing called MySpace, wasn't there?
Yeah.
That's the kind of the two reasons why those voices are deliberately inaccurate.
But I thought they were, you know, having a 13-year-old of my own, I getting her sometimes to talk about her feelings and such, I thought the maturity level and what those kids were thinking was pretty darn accurate.
Yeah. Kids that age are remarkably mature. They're not experienced.
Right.
You hope.
Yeah.
Not too experienced. But they're very adult in many ways.
Yeah. Well, let's take some more calls. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Sarah in Zion, Illinois, up next. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Larry. Hi. Awesome. I'm sorry. I just turned in. I'm so sorry. I'm working in a school that's K-6, and I've been doing it for a few years. Really only 3 years. But the thing is, I want to ask you about the issue that I have the most trouble with middle schoolers is, because I've worked in a 7th and 8th grade school also, is that I feel I can relate to them. I could, before the schools went to this computer curriculum, I felt like I could relate to the kids really well. And now I feel like their lives are so taken over by technology that I cannot relate to them. And my life is so different, and I grew up so differently. And I just wonder if you have addressed that in your characterization of your kids and how you see it.
Oh.
Yes and no. Because I'm writing about a school that has had a lot of discipline problems, one of the things that, in my experience, some of the schools tend to do is to, for example, ban cell phones. If you limit the amount of time the kids are permitted to do extraneous things, it makes them easier to focus on the matters at hand. It's also a school with a lot of mixed populations, so some of the kids just don't have the money for things. So the combination of things in the story makes them less technological than, you know, 95% of the schools out there. That, too, was deliberate because I didn't want to get distracted by all the stuff that kids have to deal with. And, yeah, I mean, kids' brains rattle all the time because of the amount of input from outside. And I found that distracting as a storyteller, so I did away with it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Wouldn't that be nice if we could just do away with it?
One aspect of your book, though, does involve as someone who is posting some things about another character in the book that gets... That is a thread that kind of runs through the book.
You mean people who are active on social media?
Yeah, there was somebody, and I'm trying to bring it out without giving
away spoilers, right?
But there is a person who is posting some very negative things about another person on Facebook, not another youth, but an adult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's you have to weave that in, obviously, because that is how we function now, is not only putting stuff out there for people to see, but the sort of reassuring semi-anonymity of being able to just put it out there and not feel responsible for it, which indeed is part of the entire problem with the bullying world, is the ease with which people can pile on now. This is a book set in 2017. It's not set in 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Linda in Mount Horeb wondered about your working style, what it's like. Do you have a set time to write, and how do you go about the whole business?
Yeah, it kind of depends on what phase the book is in. For example, at the moment, I'm working on a first draft, and I'm working up against deadline. So I tend to be working by 7 in the morning, and I tend to work long days when I've got a first draft going, because it's easier to push into the dream, as it were. But when I'm finished the first draft, it becomes a lot more analytical, and those days tend to be shorter and to have a lot more time where I'm off doing things, but the back of my head is wrestling with a problem. I tend to write a first draft in 2 months, 3 months, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I do the rewrite. Takes me probably at least 5 or 6 months. And I work a lot with my editor. I'm with Bantam Books, part of Random House. And I have one of the old-fashioned kinds of editors who actually edits. She gets into the meat of a book and rereads it a number of times, which so many people have problems now because their editors just don't have the time, which I think books suffer on. And I think that it's also one of the problems with self-published things. How do you find somebody to be really critical in their editorial work? But I have a good relationship with my editor, and so she and I go back and forth a lot on when I haven't done something right, when I need to make something stronger, when I should tone something down.
Interesting. Lucy emailed to ask, for a new writer, when we have a short story written, how do we expand on that short story? She's not sure whether to begin with a backstory or have the short story be the beginning of the whole story. Who can she talk to, or how does she figure this out?
Some people really benefit from writing groups. I've never joined one myself. I find the idea of showing something unfinished to a group of people absolutely impossible. But I think she also needs to think about the difference between a short story and a novel. I mean, a short story has a very different purpose and flavor. A short story has a point to it. It has a limited number of characters, and the narrative arc is quite quick. Whereas a novel is an entirely different thing. And a novel, this particular novel, Lockdown, is indeed built on the short stories of characters. But that's an exception, and I don't think I've ever done one before that was based, where I wrote a novel based on a short story. People have. Sometimes you write a short story and realize that it's the beginning of a world. But to my mind, there's a distinct difference between the purpose of a short story and the purpose of a novel. Hmm. I am by nature a novelist. I talk long. As you might guess, Larry. But people who are natural short story writers have a different kind of pace in their storytelling.
Yeah, interesting. and I had a thought in my head, and it just flew right out of my head.
Short stories do that, Larry.
And I don't know why, because I thought it was a really good one, too. Sabrina on Facebook wonders what kind of research was involved in this book. How did the research compare to your historical novels? And can you talk about B without one of the B Cuomo, who is, and I was going to ask about her as well, but let's talk first about your research and how it compares to, like, the historical novels.
Research in this one was was limited, partly because it's based in a time and a place where I lived. Some of the stuff does indeed involve research. For example, I needed to do some checking up on one section of it takes place in Papua New Guinea. And I was there in the late 70s. This was set slightly later than that, but I was there. And so I had that in the back of my mind when I wrote that short story originally. But when it came to things like the Gordon character tutors one of the students on Pidgin English, which is a delightful language. But I needed to double-check on that, so I needed to go back through my Pidgin English dictionaries for phrase books and that kind of thing. Similarly, you know, the police departments, the structure of police departments, this particular department is not based on a specific one. It's structured more like a sheriff's department. They call it a police department, but it's sort of plays with the flexibility of individual cities. Now, when you're doing a historical like the Russells, you need to go back and do specific research about time and place. At the moment, I'm researching the Bethlehem Mental Hospital in London, Bedlam. And trying to find the floor plans for 1925 is a little tricky because you can find them before and you can find them just after. But you know, I keep going. I am by nature an academic, and so I persist in my research.
For sure. Well, I you know, she mentioned as well B. Cuomo, and I was going to bring her up because. Her disappearance, and I don't think we're giving anything away here, she disappears. It was intriguing to me, and it seemed to be kind of, in a way, outside of the other stories.
Yep. Several months before this book opens, and the entire book takes place, as I said, in a single day. It's a career day. All of these individuals are coming to the school to talk about their careers. You have a physical therapist, you have a nurse, you have a cop. They're all talking about what they do and why they did it and what they love about it. And several months before, one of their children, one of the school students, just vanished. And that's the kind of thing that a community in some ways has more of a problem getting over that than an actual death. With a death, you can get your head around it. Whereas a disappearance is a whole, and it just is there, and it eats at you, and how do you move past it when you don't know what it is? And so when the story begins, you have this hole in it. You have a hole in the school. And so the school is coming out of a trauma when you meet it. Some of its students are very disturbed about this. Some of the parents are very disturbed about it. And yet, it's not what the story is about. It's that loss, that school loss, has shaped the community that you meet in ways that would not have happened if B. Cuomo had not disappeared, if B. Cuomo had just stayed in the school and been her own quirky self. You would meet a different school these months later. than otherwise. So she is, in a sense, more of a trigger point than the gun that comes to campus.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Elaine on Facebook says that your novel, Keeping Watch, had one of the most compelling descriptions of a soldier's experiences in Vietnam and his story years after that. She's and has enjoyed your books for many years. And there was probably some interviewing and so forth that went on for that part of that book.
Keeping Watch has a section of it that, again, is set in the past. And this is a book that takes place in the late 80s, early 90s,
yeah.
The 90s anyway. So that one of the characters in there had been a soldier in Vietnam, and his experiences shaped his life. One of the advantages about writing of something set in the 60s and 70s, as opposed to my normal world, which is the 20s, is that the amount of stuff available for research is huge.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of stuff about Vietnam that's written, that's filmed, that I tend not to use novels because it pollutes what I'm trying to do, but just the nonfiction stuff available is immense. And so this is one of the rare books that I've written where I did not actually go to Vietnam to research it, partly because the Vietnam of the 60s doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And so I depended on film and personal memory because I lived through the home front on that, and the writing that people did about it. So yeah, that was interesting. I had a number of people write to me at the time saying they couldn't believe when they found that Laurie King was not a male. That they couldn't believe that I hadn't been there.
No. Well, I tell you what, back to lockdown, this book is really a page-turner, and you have done a marvelous job. I really enjoyed reading it, and I thank you so much for taking time. How's it doing, by the way? Is it doing okay?
It seems to be doing okay. It's always interesting to do one that's not a series book because you get people as your first questions were, when is the next Russell?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're writing characters, you have to write the characters that call to you, and that's what this is. Although I really am sorry to have kept you up all night, Lorianne.
You did. It was about, quarter to three in the morning when I finally got to that part. And I thought, oh, my goodness me. What? Here, it's this hour, and I'm sitting, laying here in bed? Oh.
I apologize.
But it was a lot of fun.
Okay.
Laurie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Laurie King, New York Times bestselling author of 13 Mary Russell Mysteries, 5 contemporary novels featuring Kate Martinelli, and the many acclaimed standalone novels that she's written, too. Her latest is Lockdown, a novel of suspense. I enjoyed reading it very much, and I bet you will as well. Well, not to keep you in too much suspense here, we're going to shift gears and talk about Wisconsin's wine industry and spirits a little bit, too, with Philippe Coquart of Wallersheim Winery. That next here on the Ideas Network.